Welcome to Soul Town. I'm Reginald Jenkins, and I'll be hosting you on this ride on through Soul Town. we are looking at the music industry from the standpoint, what we're going to really focus on is some of the things that occurred during the soul music era that had an effect on the economic and financial and political environment of that period of time, which we are talking about the 60s, 70s, and 80s. Over these three decades, the soul era pretty much came to fruition and also ended and came to a slowdown, very, very big slowdown and a change that we would now refer to that genre of music as hip-hop R&B, which the book, An Excursion in Soul, explains all of these things as far as, you know, the naming of the certain genres of how of the R&B genre and some of the names that it has been known in within the industry, race music, R&B music, different titles over according to what period of time that we're looking at over the during the pop era, pop music era, and which in music went back in a ways, but these are some of the things we want to look at this week as far as the independent distribution network that was operated during this period of time in which some of the major record companies in history were a part of, like Motown, Stax, various other companies that a lot of them started off as independent companies. They eventually were bought out by the major labels like CBS and Warner Brothers and, you know, some of the other large companies, which were tied into maybe PolyGram, Universal situation there. But a lot of these independent record companies were vital to the music business economically because of the talent that was brought into the industry through the independent distribution network, the independent music distributors and promoters or whatever. All of this was something that was very vital in the music business for a long period of time, and it still is vital because the independents, they had a closer situation with the actual community as far as the music. They were able to see the raw talent and bring the raw talent to fruition. Acts like Frankie Lymon and the Teenagers and the guys back way back in the day and the other acts like Aretha Franklin and Otis Redding. All of these acts were some kind of way tied into the independent music distribution situation. And like I say, the book An Excursion in Soul will give you a good broad idea. It's going on the Amazon.com and enter An Excursion in Soul, enter my name, Reginald Jenkins, and it will come up and you can read the excerpts from it. And if you want to go, if you got an iPad or something like that, a Kindle Fire or whatever, you can go through the Kindle and Kindle store, whatever, and download it free of charge at this point. You know, you can just see if it's still available free of charge. Tell them you want to get a copy and just say you would like to borrow it, you know, and you can get it free of charge downloaded on your iPad. So just in your Kindle. So just go in and check it out and get some of the information, because there's a lot of information in it about things that occurred during the soul music era. It was a lot of things occurring during that period of time, believe it or not. But you know, you had places like Motown, you had Philadelphia International, you had Source out of Los Angeles, and you know, I mean, then you had all the companies, Atlantic and Arista, and I mean, just various record companies were taking part in the music industry from the independent standpoint, more so than you had. Okay, you had the five or six major labels that were automatically major labels, international labels like Warner Brothers, CBS, MCA, MCA, Polygram, Sony. All those were in that same group right there. And then you had EMI, English Music Incorporated, which, you know, as we know, had the Beatles situation. But those major companies, but the independent labels were very active during this period of time. They actually generated, people came through these companies like Barry Manilow, Marvin Gaye, Stevie Wonder, Otis Redding, Carla Thomas, the Staple Singers, the Temptations, Smokey Robinson and the Miracles. I mean, all these, you know, it was just a Gladys Knight. It was a very lucrative business in as far as through the independent situation at that period of time. He had Jimi Hendrix. I mean, it was very, very lucrative. And it still can be, because it's based on talent, and talent and the ability to market the product to the public. And music marketing is a special way it's done. I mean, it's so loose and foolish out here, you would think, okay, there's really no protocol in the music industry as far as how things are done. But there is a protocol in the music industry of how things are done. It has to be followed. If it's not followed, it don't happen. It just won't happen. You'll be really, you know, just out there, you know, if you don't follow the real protocol where it has to be followed. And if you don't know what the protocol is, you need to find out. It's not a situation where it's something that's not in the book. You can't go to an actual library and pull up the protocol for releasing your product in the music industry, releasing a musical product to the public. And that was something that was a privilege to fade in and see how that was done. And the knowledge that I learned from seeing a record go up the Billboard charts from lower and all the way into the top five or top number one spot on every major music company, Cashbox, BRE, just Impact Magazine, it was like number one all across the country. I mean, to see it go up and to see several other records go in, you know, and like I say, you had some hits and some records that were good records, but they went through the correct protocol and were able to make it into the top 100 in the nation. So I know that it has to be done through the music industry the way that it has to be done. And that's just something that has been the situation all the time. One thing about it, everybody wants some personal attention in the industry. Every program director, every music director, and every radio station and TV station across the country want personal attention. And then, you know, that's just part of the situation, of the equation. But the equation is so much broader now with the social media available that, you know, if everything is taken advantage of, it can be very, very, very lucrative for the total music industry, especially the new, young, upcoming companies and individuals that are going to really be the future of the music industry. And the music industry, as we know it and as we knew it, is going to be pretty similar to what it is now. It's not going to be a big difference, because music is music. I mean, the thing is, you might play it on a stereo, or you might play it on a CD player, but in the end, you're trying to hear that music that was recorded on there. And the clearer you can hear it, the better. So that's one of the things that has to be taken advantage of in the independent industry. I mean, the independent industry generated billions and billions of dollars over the years. I mean, they introduced acts like the Jackson 5 and New Edition and the OJs. Well, not the OJs. They were an independent label, but the label was eventually bought out by CBS. But you have so many independent companies that came in. You got like A&M Records, and you know, with Janet Jackson and different other people who were independent companies just that were out here doing their thing. And you check like Motown, that started off releasing just singles. They would release singles, and which we know at that time a single was less than a dollar. I mean, 99, 95 cents, just like a single is now, 99 cents. If you go in the iPod and download a single, it's 99 cents. I mean, but if the single hit and then you can get an album cut, you know you are in a pretty good situation. But the thing is that get it out there. You know, that's the whole thing. Put it together and get it in the market. Because there is a demand for musical product in the music business right now. Most of my experience was involved in the R&B industry, but with what product that we did have, that it was at that particular time, like I say, we were looking at the end of the R&B soul era and the beginning of the R&B hip-hop era. And so we were the company, our company came in at the change over when the beginning of the hip-hop R&B era. But our writers and producers were from the R&B soul era. So that was a situation that we had. We had R&B writers who had wrote hit records for the Staple Singers and the Isaac Hayes and David Ruffin and different people. I mean, but they were in that era. So even though I was the president of the company, but I wasn't the producer of the product. I wasn't the writer. So the only thing I could sell was the product that the writers and the producers were bringing me to sell, and it was some hit records. I mean, it was not like they weren't bringing me on hit records. I mean, they were bringing me hit records. I mean, what can I say? They brought me some hits, and you know, I'm some hit artists, and we were independent. And let me play one for you right here, Shirley Brown, Boyfriend, Be a Board.
I'm
Yes, that was Shirley Brown from the soul music era. Shirley came in at the end, close to the end of the soul music era. She came in the mid-70s, and she was with Stax Records, who was, at that time, I mean, Isaac Hayes and the Shaft movement, the entire situation had totally impacted the economic situation in the city as far as having an effect on the political and some of the social situations in Memphis. That was a big change during that era because of the period of time during that period, the era where the assassinations and things of that nature had occurred for Dr. King and some of the bad things that happened in the South and other parts of the country. Well, it was bad as far as soul music era was concerned, but that was all a part of what happened. We're talking about the soul music era. We're looking back all the way back to President John F. Kennedy. During that era, you had Sam Cooke was considered to be the number one R&B, number one soul artist in the world at that particular time. And Muhammad Ali often stated that was his favorite entertainer, and that was his friend also. But he was a brilliant act, and he had the privilege of having some connection with Soul Town here in the city when he was a gospel artist with the Soul Stirrers. My pastor, Dr. Brewster, wrote a couple of million sellers that mean big songs for the Soul Stirrers back at that time, and so they were very involved with Soul Town. I mean, this was Sam Cooke. I mean, we're looking back at the beginning of the soul music era, but that is, and we also looking at some of the independent labels that brought about a lot of music out of the just from grassroots situations. I mean, when Jim Hendrix was with Roulette Records, whoever would have thought, I mean, that it was going to turn into a that he was going to turn into a multi-million dollar, phenomenon, which he did. And Roulette Records definitely reaped a lot of the profits from that situation. And but that is what would be considered, a lot of people look at being the pioneers of the music industry. And I was blessed because I was a college student. My main music at that particular time was Earth, Wind, and Fire. I was Earth, Wind, and Fire music. I mean, that was the era. I mean, you got, Earth, Wind, and Fire. You got the Emotions, and you got all of these acts that were. But it was still the end of the R&B era. But that was in college. When we were in college, it was Earth, Wind, and Fire was the hottest act in the world. I mean, I mean, we're. So, I mean, that was the hottest group around. I mean, we were at University of Kentucky, University of Tennessee. I mean, it was like hot. Number one R&B, number one pop group in the world that year, a couple of years. I mean, it was like that's where the music business was at that particular time, as far as I was concerned. But you had other R&B acts. I mean, you had acts that were hot. I mean, like the Manhattans and the OJs and the Isley Brothers and I mean, just, you know, I mean, we, like, we go back to Soul Town, we look at Al Green and the Barcase and the Temprees and, you know, just Johnny Taylor and, I mean, all of these acts. But even back to Shirley Brown, Shirley was right in the middle of those acts there. She came in, when Shirley came in with I'll Be the Other Woman, not I'll Be the Other Woman, but Woman to Woman, that was in the mid-70s, and it hits. It turned out to be a big record. It hit the number one on R&B chart, and, I mean, it just took off. I mean, it was covered by Barbara Mandrell and different other artists, but it was, I mean, it was a song that's with two women, well, one woman talking to another one, letting her know, you know, what she thought, but it was put to music, and it turned out to be a smash. But Shirley was a hot artist at that time during the R&B era with Stax, and I mean, I remember seeing her on Soul Train, and the record was so hot. I mean, these high school students, I mean, they were staying up late at night trying to see Shirley, you know, and that's where you want it to be. You want your music to be to the point of where everybody wants to see the artist, want to hear them and play the music. And that's the way it was. And so I'm going to run Shirley again here. And this is another song that's on her Intimate Storm album that was on the album that we produced at Soundtown Records. And the album had a possibility, it could have been, it was a good possibility, it could have been produced for the Queen of Soul. She wanted the product, and Jerry Griffith had set it up, but Homer and the rest of the company decided that to just go with the artist that's in-house. That turned out to be the vote of the actual vote of the stockholders and the board of directors. So we had to go that way. But here she is singing another Billboard Top 100 record off of that same album, Intimate Storm, Leave the Bridges Standing. Now, when it first come on, you're going to hear the end of It Used to Be Your House, Now It's Another Man's Home, which was also another Top 100. She had four Top 100 Billboard songs off of this album. And to do that, you know, each one had to go on Billboard in Top 100, you know, you got to be playing closest, you know, for close to between 25% to 75% of that genre got to be playing your record on the radio station. But here you go right here. The end of It's Be Your House, Another Man Home, Now It's Another Man Home, and right into Leave the Bridge Standing.
What we have
1975. Motown had already moved from Detroit to Los Angeles and to Hollywood, and there were just a lot of things going on with internal music of in that genre, which was basically inroads into the pop genre, which now is almost one and the same to a certain extent. The whole pop music genre is just a major situation right now, and which is the way it's supposed to be and the way it should be, and it should be more so that way than whereas the small artists and small entrepreneurs can penetrate the market and make a living in the music industry with good, solid hit product. And that should be the main qualification to be in, to get into the business, to have some major hit and successful product that can be introduced to the market. And that is the overall situation, really. And when it all boils down, it's got to come from that angle. And it can be done, and it is possible. So anybody interested in the music industry, learning anything about the music industry, just call this number, area code now, 347-838-9800. 9142. I repeat, 347-838-9142. And that's Soul Town. As for Soul Town, the Sound of Music. And submit your questions to the host or for the host, and we'll definitely get you an answer. And if you're able to do it live, we'll answer it right then and there. We'll get it taken care of for you, so give us a call. All right. Now, in the soul music era, we, like I said, one group bore the name of the Soul Children. Everybody said, well, how come they would be named the Soul Children? Why? They were named the Soul Children by the inventors of the soul cultural situation that occurred. You had Isaac Hayes and David Porter. They were the beginners of the soul situation. I mean, you had Soul Man, Sam and Dave. I mean, that was a major hit in the early 60s. I mean, in the 60s, Soul Man, Hold On, I'm Coming, and several other major records that came out of Stax Records that at that time, produced by Isaac Hayes and David Porter. And written and produced by Isaac Hayes and David Porter, okay. The whole thing. But they were the talent that was able to be to penetrate the market. But that can be done now. The market can be penetrated now with the right if the right protocol is followed, it can be done. But I started the show off talking about there is a protocol in the music business. There's a protocol as far as how it could be penetrated and what it would take to penetrate it. And that can be done. It's just a matter of being persistent and having access to the right product that can penetrate the market. That when it all boils down, the main thing is you want to get this product in front of in front of this person that has the ability to make a deal. So in order to do that, you have to get the correct product, the correct sound, and then it's a matter of getting it to someone who knows what needs to be done as far as getting the product into the market or getting it to the correct person that could possibly make a deal. So that's all a part of the whole situation. And you definitely want to get the product mainly, have it ready, and make sure it's well tested as far as the validity of it, of whether or not, because the whole thing boils down to you got to get in the regular media and the social media all at the same time. It's got to be all coordinated and taken care of, done. So that's the bottom line. It has to be coordinated, and the right protocol has to be followed, and everything will work out. I mean, it's just not rocket science. I mean, it's not something that we have to really look at too deep as far as whether or not it can be done. It can be done, it has been done, it will be done. It's just a matter of who's going to do it. It's going to be done. because it's not something that, you know, it's just a matter of putting certain parts in certain places and making sure that everything is the correct part. And that's basically it. I mean, you want a record, a musical composition that excels up the trade charts, the cash boxes of the world and the billboards of the world. You want something that's going to, and when you do that, you are penetrating the market. You are penetrating the market because in order for every number that you climb to, then that means so many more people, thousands and thousands, hundreds of thousands of people are actually hearing and seeing your product. Because you're getting it, you want to get it in front of everybody. If you can get it in front of everybody, if you got a dud, you got a dud. If the record ain't going to work, it ain't going to work. But you want to have the capacity to be able to get that done. But any questions concerning the music industry, please give us a call at 347-838-9142. And just give us, give us your take on it and give us ask us any questions that you have about it. And like I say, the Soul Children, which consisted of Jay Blackfoot, who was the first artist that we released, were with the Stax Record Company also, and they were produced by, like, Science Gaze and David Porter. And they had some hits that a lot of people remembered at that particular time. Hold On, I'm Coming. Soul Man, that was David Porter, Isaac Hayes. Did that, the Soldier had The Sweeter He Is, and, you know. And then my friend and partner in Soundtown wrote Woman, I'll Be the Other Woman for the Soldier, which was performed by Shelby Dean, one of the members of the group. She did a great job, and everybody, realized that was a hit record. I mean, Homer Banks was the writer, one of the writers on it, and did a very good job on it. And he's also the writer on Jay Blackfoot's single, his initial single, his debut single, right out of the box, was Taxi, and it was a hit. That was his debut. Well, that was his debut album. Let me say that was his debut album. But Taxi was, off the debut album, City Slicker, and, I mean, it came right on in with a bang. It debuted number one on the Jet Top 20. And this was something that, shocked me. I was kind of like, hey, what happened? Number five, number one, Thriller was number five. And I said, man, that's great. But here's Jay Blackfoot when he first came. Like I say, he was a former Stax artist and came in with Soundtown Records, and Homer Banks came out with a major hit on him. But here he is, Jay Blackfoot. I tell you what we're going to do. We're going to go with, we're going to just kind of let you hear the first two songs on the City Slicker album. The first one is The Way of the City. This is Jay Blackfoot. This is just some vintage old music, soul music that up-tempo, get up on the floor, dance, but he's talking about what really happened and kind of give you a feel almost of that Stevie Wonder song with the same kind of idea, about what was going on in the city. But here's Jay Blackfoot, The Way of the City, with Mr. Rod Kenny doing the monologue. And he's just the first song off the City Slick album. He's gonna let everybody know how long they gotta listen to it, and it's, hey, for the next 34 minutes, you're gonna be really on the ride.
Do not adjust the sound on your stereo. There is nothing wrong with your set. For the next 34 minutes, I will control what you hear and feel. You're about to be taken on a musical safari through the most ferocious jungle known to man. The jungle where the hunter is often captured by the game. This is the city, and you are there.
So that was the first song off his Dave Blackfoot's album, City Slicker. And the second song off of it was Taxi. And, I mean, well, that was the first song on the album. It wasn't off of it because we didn't release The Way of the City as a single. But Taxi was the second song on the album. And, I mean, and so a lot of people heard The Way of the City, and it did real well just because of the location. This being the first song on the album, and the album, by the album selling over, you know, 500,000 copies, The single generated it. So we're going to look at it, but the independent distributors brought a mini act to the stage. So, you know, we want to commend them for what they did. I mean, we're talking back Dionne Warwick. I mean, we're looking way back. So definitely that they deserve that credit. But we have to look at it from a standpoint of now and in the future. But as in always, we here at Soul Town would like to wish you peace, love, and soul, and keep those heads toward the sky. And here's the second single, the first single off of the J. Blackfoot album, City Slicker, a hit that rolled up the charts and did very well. Taxi by J. Blackfoot, formerly with the Soul Church and Stax Records, and recorded this song with Sound Town Records and had a top of the chart hit. Here we go.
What's happening? Man, I gotta hurry up and get there. Huh, I don't see no cabs nowhere. Wait, yeah, that one over there. Yeah, that's it. Take me to the other side of life. Just as fast as you can. Before my lady put me down, please won't you hurry? Can't you see she's got me worried? I don't wanna lose her. I don't wanna lose her. The call town is too slow. Hitchhiking is a no-no. She's all I'm thinking of. All I'm thinking of. Taxi. I've got some passion. Yes, I have. Taxi. Like a fool, I roll.